All right. Good afternoon. Or is it still morning?
I don't know.
It's an honor to be before you today. I'm really excited about this book that we're covering, Habakkuk. It's kind of hard to pronounce. Some say Habakkuk. But it is a great book, and I have to confess, I'm a little ashamed. I just got my master's last year in biblical studies, and I don't need it because I really didn't know too much about Habakkuk before Christian asked me to preach about this. So this you know, it's been a good, great 2 months learning about this book, and I discovered how much I really resonate with this book and my life and my journey. I mean, it's only 3 chapters, but it's about Habakkuk, his cry out to God, and God responds. It's huge, right? We borrow a lot from it, but it's really blessed my life, and I think we can all resonate with Habakkuk, right? I was out in Washington, D.C. when I had a lot of Habakkuk moments, okay? But this Habakkuk moment, I was writing this song, and I was in D.C. We were going to fund our program because I was a youth bill director. And I said, in between the House and the Senate, on Capitol Hill, where justice became a figment. And that was based on one of my students. During lunchtime, I was pulled out of a meeting to find that he was beaten by the police. He was in school. His New Year's resolution was, I just want to grow closer to God. I don't know everything that happened. We saw the video, but the man is now paralyzed and can't. His whole left side is paralyzed. His life is forever changed. And there's been many moments. I've seen a 12-year-old lose his life for nothing, right? I've seen an 18-year-old lose his life for nothing. And we ask this question, like, where are you, God? What's going on? And that is Habakkuk crying to God, where are you? What's going on? And so this whole book actually revolves around dialogue between man and God. And that's what's great about it. You can go to the next slide. It's basically Habakkuk initiating conversation with God, God responding, Habakkuk responding, God responding, Habakkuk responding. 3 chapters, that's it, a conversation, right? I just visualized like a text message, and I made this little thing for you to see, right? It's a lot more than that, but really, God is engaged in conversation with Habakkuk. And we see Habakkuk get more answers, kind of. Job was in it, David was in it. We even see Jesus saying, you know, giving his heart and honesty to God. And so we've been going through this the last couple of weeks. It's been great. Andrew, Dan, and Denise have provided some great insight. And so on my turn, you know, I'm going to deal with Habakkuk's issues. I'm going to review a little bit about that. We're going to go to God's solutions, his response, and then the application. All right? And then we'll be out of your way. All right? So who was Habakkuk? Well, I said this in first service. I probably served over 400, 500 students. Next year is going to be 10 years of me working with youth. And I've seen a lot of Isaiahs, Jeremiahs, Elijahs, but I've never seen an Habakkuk. All right? That's a minor prophet. The name is not that sexy, right? So we just kind of don't know about it, but this book is central to our faith, I believe, and we see Paul using it in the New Testament 3 times. And so, but Habakkuk, we don't know too much about him. He may have been a worship leader because the way he frames his book is kind of psalmist. It's very psalmist, psalmist style. And what was he going through? What was he in? What was going on at the time, we have to ask, right? So what was going on was there was corruption in Israel. The leaders, people have forsaken God's law, right? And if we know God's law is a safeguard for us, right? God only tells us to do things that are better for us, not for him. He's God, right? He tells us things to safeguard, and they were no longer following the law. They were abusing the law and abusing each other. And so that was going on, and God is like, and Habakkuk is like, okay, God, what's going on? Where are you at? And then at the same time, the Assyrian Empire, they were ruling for about a century, and they were used to, you know, they had a setup going where they wouldn't be bothered. But now there was war going on because the Babylonian Empire was coming in. And so there was wars all around, and there was damage. And Habakkuk was in the center of that damage. Not a king, not a politician, right? But a messenger of God who usually had the answers. And now he stomped. Like, okay, God, what's going on? Can you identify with that? Can you identify? I can relate to that. And so one of the themes, major themes, is God's justice. Is God just, right? And so we're going to keep on going forward, right? What is Habakkuk's issue with God? I took a little bit out of chapter 1 just so you can get a glimpse of this. You may have been here, you may have not. But Habakkuk says, how long, Lord, must I call for help? But you do not listen, or cry out to you violence, but you do not save. Why are you silent when the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? So Habakkuk is seeing the innocent being taken advantage of. And I just want to zoom in on silence. Something that we struggle with and is hard. We're vocal people. We need to hear. We got two ears and one mouth, right? We need to hear what's going on. We need to understand. We need communication. And this silence from God can be scary. It can be uneasy. And that's what Habakkuk is talking about, and that's what he's going through. And not even, let's just go to man, right? Man, silence with us. You know, silence treatment, that's not a very fun thing. You know, I've been married for about a year and a half. I know when it's silent time, it's a problem, right? So that doesn't feel good. So imagine with God, right? Silence, we feel it's masqueraded in conspiracies, it's symbolic of, well, it's about to be a breakup, or it's a breakup, like a relationship is done, right? And so this silence Habakkuk is feeling, and it's foggy, right? How many of us, it's foggy in life? We don't understand exactly what's going on. It's actually one of the number one arguments for atheists. Essence of the argument from God's silence is that an all-powerful, all-knowing God must have the power to deliver his message himself, directly to each and every one of us, and with such clarity as to brook no argument or confusion. The fact that this has not happened presents clear evidence that no such God exists. That's some people's argument, that God is not speaking, right? And so if somebody that doesn't have a relationship with God is struggling, and Habakkuk is struggling, this is a real thing that we have to grapple with. And we've been learning that we have to faithfully wrestle with this. Faithfully wrestle. Habakkuk goes to God and says, God, what's, in my terms, what's good, God? You know, I don't understand this. And so as we move forward, I want to talk about two things, how we perceive silence, as I review a little bit over. So two things that we receive, that we perceive from silence. One, silence gives consent. Anybody ever heard of that? Silence is consent, right? I learned this at my 28 years old, a zealous director, I don't know, five, six years ago, right? I learned this right away, right? What I say and what I don't say is huge, right? If somebody comes in late, I don't say anything. I can create a culture of the whole program being late, off schedule, right? If somebody abuses somebody or mistreats a student, if I don't say anything and I try to turn away or whatever, it creates a pattern, right? There's problems that silence creates, right? And they can think that I'm okay with it. I consent. I endorse that, right? But, and so it's very important when we sometimes don't hear God, we feel like God is endorsing something and we feel alone. And that is not the case that God is trying to show Habakkuk right now. What's another feeling that we get when silence is happening? Silence is betrayal. I don't know if you ever heard of that. But Martin Luther King says, and history will have to record that the greatest tragedy of this period of social transition was not the strident clamor of the bad people, but the appalling silence of the good people. In the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. And then he says, a time comes when silence is betrayal. And this is a time where Martin Luther King, he's saying that it's not necessarily the extreme racist person that's aiding and pushing the injustices. It's really the silent majority that are not speaking out because of comfort level, or they're not sure, right? And so he's saying the silence is pushing. And this is just between man. I'm just talking about man right now. Let's dive into this a little bit more with betrayal. Let's go a little bit further. Betrayal, we know a lot about that. We're very familiar with it. When it goes to Lucifer betraying God, Adam and Eve betraying God, Adam and Eve betraying each other going out. He said, this woman you gave me. It was like, and then we have what? Cain and Abel, their children, betraying each other. This betrayal is very real. Jesus and Judas and Caesar and Brutus and Peter. And what's this betrayal we feel that's real? What is betrayal? It's an expectation that we're let down. Something doesn't happen for us that we expected, and it doesn't happen. Now, do we say, God, you betrayed me? Usually we don't, all right? Usually we don't. We haven't really been taught how to be honest with God. But we see that in the Bible. We see David being honest. We see Habakkuk being honest. And it's very important, because the thing about silence is you're left to your own interpretation sometimes. And if you don't know the object, the person, then you're going to project man's ways on that person. And so what we do is we project our way on God, right? You see it with a student who's been raised in a hostile environment. You can't even really give him a hug or a love. He's not used to that. He's just used to people hurting them. She is just used to people using them. And so they are on guard all the time. And us in this hostile world do the same thing to God. Can God betray man? It's not even possible. He is love. He is God, right? He is perfect. He is holy. He has a bigger heart for us than we could ever imagine. But when you're in a situation where the circumstances feel very hard, it's hard to see or hear anything else. And so what do you do when you think that God betrayed you, right? And so a few things I want you to know is God never betrays man. We can't project upon God. We have to go after him like a backup. We have to seek after him. What we don't understand, it's okay to cry to God. It's okay to be honest. It's okay to unleash your anger on him. He's not intimidated by that. God is more grown than all of us, right? There's a saying that, you know, God is grown. He's not a little one, right? He's heard it. He's seen. You're not going to intimidate God or say anything that he hasn't heard before, in a sense, right? Faithfully wrestle. Andrew brought this thing up. Faithfully wrestle means to wrestle with God. Habakkuk is, he has a question, but guess who he's going to, right? He's not going somewhere else to medicate his doubt. He's going to God. And then even one time he says, I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait for you at the watchtower. That's what Denise said. A great message. Honesty is the best policy. You got to be honest with God. He knows your thoughts anyways. He knows what you're thinking anyways. But if you were maybe raised in a traditional background like me, you may have problems with that. And I just want to bring out one quick thing really quickly about the justice of God. All right? Our cry to God about justice and what's going on. Tim Keller has something very interesting to say, and he was quoting Martin Luther King. He said, Martin Luther King wrote a letter to Birmingham, and he said, the only way we can know a human law is unjust is if there is a higher law, a divine law from God. In fact, if there is no higher law divine from God, there would be no way to know whether a human law was unjust or not. So if there is no God, somebody can say, oh, that law is unjust. But that is only according to their standards. And why should their standards be privileged over someone else's? You see, that justice mechanism in you points to God, because that is not natural. Our natural desire is to look out for ourselves and our own and protect our own, preserve our own. But God, who is love, puts a mechanism in us to actually care about people outside of our circle, right? And so when somebody says, you know, why is there evil in the world? They're actually pointing to, well, there must be good, right? Because there will be no question if God is not real, then what is evil and what is good? There's no difference between Martin Luther King or Adolf Hitler. They both did what was right in their own sight. But history says something different for us about them and who the men are that are doing righteous, right? And so remember that. Don't be discouraged about the silence. Know that, and we're going to talk about God speaking and God's solutions now. So God's solutions. I don't want to take this lightly. I feel like Abaka got some great answers. And it's very important that we search and we see it, all right? Because this verse right here is actually a key to Abaka and the whole book, right? It's a small piece in there, but it's God's instruction. It's God's key for us. So we're going to go to, The solution actually started last week, obviously, with Denise when she said, wait for it. Wait for God. She taught us how to wait. And God gives the vision. That's God speaking. He says, I have the vision. I'm going to come through for you, but I need you to wait and be patient, right? We can't always comprehend. If we could comprehend everything that God is doing, then we are God. We're bigger than God. We're smarter than God, right? But we can't hold what God has is on his shoulders. He's buffering for us, right? And he loves us. So let's get to the reading. Habakkuk 2 and 4. I don't know if anybody carries books anymore. These old things. See, the enemy is puffed up. His desires are not upright, but the righteous person will live by his faithfulness. Indeed, wine betrays him. He is arrogant and never at rest, because he is as greedy as the grave, and like death is never satisfied. He gathers to himself all the nations and takers captive of all the peoples. Will not all of them taunt him with ridicule and scorn, saying, woe to him who piles up stolen goods and makes himself wealthy by extortion? How long must this go on? Will not your creditors suddenly arise? Will they not wake up and make you tremble? Then you will become their prey, because you have plundered many nations. The peoples who are left will plunder you, for you have shed human blood. You have destroyed lands and cities and everyone in them. Woe to him who builds his house by unjust gain, setting his nest on high to escape the churches of ruin. You have plotted the ruin of many peoples, shaming your own house and forfeiting your life. The stones of the wall will cry out, and the beams of the woodwork still echo it. Woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed and establishes a town by injustice. Has not the Lord Almighty determined that the people labor is only fuel for the fire, that the nations exhaust themselves for nothing? And finally, verse 14, for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And God bless the readers. And so verse 2-4 starts out with a contrast. What's the contrast? The contrast is, he says, the enemy is puffed up and his soul and his desire is not upright. And then he says, the righteous. So we're talking about the puffed up and we're talking about the righteous. And so the two types of people, one, the first one's confidence is in himself or herself. Hope, I have arrows, I created the diagram, in themselves, right? The second, the righteous, is pointing up, right? The righteous, not necessarily that you made all the right decisions, not necessarily that you didn't sin, you didn't do certain sins, but the righteous, his confidence is in God. It's what made them righteous. We can go to the next slide. So who are the puffed up? Let's break this down really quickly. In context, he's talking about the Babylonians, the king, right? That group that basically Habakkuk had a problem with. Because Habakkuk's problem with was with God that, why are you silent? And then God says, no, I'm here. I'm going to send the Babylonians. And then he's like, well, why are you sending the Babylonians? They're more wicked than our nation. You know, there's a little bit of righteousness over here, but they don't even care about us, God. Right? So if you put it in like Marvel text, maybe a villain comes to, you know, chastise Captain Planet. Not Captain Planet. Captain America, right? Sorry to the comic people. Right? He doesn't understand why God is using them as a tool of discipline. What's some things about the Babylonians? They're ruthless, impetuous people. This is in chapter 1. Impetuous meaning impulsive. They just kind of do whatever they want. They're a law to themselves. They don't really follow anybody. They promote their own honor. They're violent, strong, fast warriors. They mock king. They scoff at rulers. They laugh at fortified cities. So basically, they prey on the weak, right? And guilty people whose own strength is their God, right? I can't really connect with, like, all of it. I'm not we're not warriors plundering villages and children. But this last part here, whose own strength is their God, how engraved is that in our society, right? And so what's the translation for today? We're really talking about the arrogant man or woman whose reliance and dependence is on themselves, right? In other words, they got it, right? What's their position? What's their posture? If you can go to the next slide. Their posture is, the arrogant position is, they went out to get everything with or without God. If you break it down, what the Babylonians were, that's what they were. They did whatever they wanted, what they feel they needed. And some people would say, tell you, you know, we have a God hole in us, that we're always trying to resolve what God has given us. And they chose to go out and get it their way. Now, the righteous. The righteous is part of a believing remnant who believes the vision, who was waiting on God's deliverance from the wicked. Amen. It's a difference. It's a contrast. One is leaning on himself. The other is leaning on God. Now notice I didn't say they pray 4 or 5 times a day. Notice I didn't say they dress a certain way. There's a posture in your heart, not necessarily the workings of your hands. And sometimes we confuse that. Okay? So it's very important. In everything, their posture is, I need God. I consult with God. That convicts me, because I don't always consult with God. And sometimes I do this Jedi mind trick on myself, like, well, I'm doing what God wants, right? He told me to work, I'm going to work, right? He told me to just do good, I'm doing good. And I don't necessarily let him lead and guide me. And so what does this mean that the just, now that we understand the righteous and the puffed up, what does this mean that the just live by faith? Well, it's really his faithfulness, and it's really translated faith is emunah. I don't really speak Hebrew, but this is what we've learned. Emunah, meaning faithfulness, meaning trustworthiness, integrity, moral, right? So it's not just a mental agreement with God, but it's a mental agreement grounded in conduct going after God. So your mind and your body follows. Your faithfulness, your faith and their works, they go together. That's what we're talking about here. Living by faith, chasing God, right? You may not understand it. Something may be unknown, but that's what the world does. Whatever they don't know, whatever's not understood, let me figure it out and do something about it. Because we're anxious. We never want to be, you know, left out of something. But that doesn't change that we're left out. The fact that you're doing everything doesn't mean that you're going to make the situation better. You could actually make the situation worse. And so God is saying, depend on me and not necessarily what's going on in your environment. Because remember the context. Habakkuk had a lot to worry about. There was a lot to fear. They were vulnerable. These Babylonians were coming in. They were taking what they wanted. There was wars, uneasy. And we can relate to that, what's going on in our country, what's going on in our world. People dying for no reason, right? Nuclear bombs being tested, right? All these things going on. But there's a reason to fear without God. But with God, there's no reason to fear. And that's God. God is saying, I am bigger than all of this. Though the earth is shaking below you, I am bigger than that. I created the earth. Though the storm, you feel the winds, I made the winds and the waters. That's how Jesus walked. He wasn't afraid, right? They said, oh, don't you care that we're going to perish when the storm was happening? Jesus had the utmost godly confidence, of course. And if God has confidence, we should have confidence in him, all right? And so we are not just a product of the environment. Listen to me. We're not a product. We're not a product of our circumstances. God is saying, don't be dictated by the circumstances. And that's sometimes where we lose ourselves. It gets a little uncomfortable. And God is saying, I'm with you. Hold on. You may not understand. Listen, God's heart is bigger than all of us in here. And he loves. I wouldn't give my son for a world that curses me out, doesn't believe in me, right? But God did. And so God is more invested than anybody else. What's the saying? Skin in the game? God is more skin in the game than anybody else. And so we have to trust that. And so these woe oracles, verses 5 through 13 that I read, I was reading that because Habakkuk's problem was, God, how are you going to let them get away with this? And God is saying, I'm not letting anybody get away with this. They're going to reap what they sow, all right? There's a cycle. God is just. When you go through that, God is just, and God will repay. God will redeem. We have to trust that. Though the world is pulling apart through greed, through violence, covetousness, that's what he's going through. He's saying, okay, they murdered for gain, but that's not going to be the last story. That's not going to be the final word. God is saying, I'm going to have the final word. Verse 14, I love it. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. God is saying, I'm going to redeem. Do you believe? Do you believe? Will you walk with me? Will you trust me, though you don't understand it? I know sometimes I don't, right? And we don't always say it to God that, oh, you betrayed me. Oh, you let something happen. But a lot of times it shows in our actions. Maybe we don't pray as much. Maybe we don't worship like we used to. Maybe there's something in our past that we haven't really gotten over. And we really blame God. You know how many moments I really found out that I was blaming God? I didn't want to say it. Because here I'm a Christian. I'm a minister. I'm supposed to smile. I'm supposed to worship. I'm supposed to always have an answer. The joy of the Lord is my strength. But there was times where I really blamed God. I have a friend that I used to, he was a colleague, a teacher. He worked with me with youth. And we would always debate. Because he didn't believe in God. And he was like, well, how can you believe God? He controls everything that happens. That doesn't even make sense. And we would at least once a week have a huge debate. And what I learned was, you know, I could give him all the evidence. And there's enough evidence in the world to know that there is God. God exists. I remember I had Elijah. He comes with me. I teach on two Sundays. And I took him out last week I told him, what does the sky say to you? And he said, do you believe me? Do you believe me? See, God is not silent. He was actually quoting a psalm and he didn't even know it. Because the psalm says the heavens declare his glory. They utter a speech day to day, right? God is speaking. Are we hearing? Are we listening? Are we putting ourselves in position? So back to the story where I love him. His name's Jay. And I realized that it really wasn't a rational thing for him why he didn't believe God. It was really that his mother died and he never understood why God let that happen. He felt that she was too young to die. Why did you let this happen? So it wasn't a mental, it was a heart thing. But if he only knew that God loved his mother than he could ever imagine, that God's heart for his mother was bigger than he could ever imagine. And that's what gives me comfort and peace today, that God's love and heart is bigger than I could ever imagine. And he's created us with such significance and such importance, such value that the world is just trying to strip it away. And so what is that thing for you today? What is God saying to you? What have you not given to God? What have we not trusted? What did we bury in the past? And the worship team can come up. What have we buried and not really cried out to God? And a lot of times, when I've done that, came the most relief and I got the most peace. We need to complete the Habakkuk moment. Because Habakkuk just didn't cry out to God and then run away. Habakkuk said, God, where are you? And he stayed there. But we, where are you, God? And we medicate our pain with something else that we don't need, that we find out it just leaves us more empty. And so what is God saying to us today? God is saying, I am with you. Do you believe? God is saying, I have you. Can you trust me? The just live by faith. What other things are we living by? I had to confront this, and this message wasn't easy. Sometimes I put a lot of stock in my career and my value. You know, it says that I'm important because I feel devalued at times. Sometimes I don't feel welcomed or loved in this country when, you know, I may have been pulled over and I've never done anything illegal, per se, right? Sometimes I struggle with that. And I want to fight so hard to say, I'm important as everybody else, but God has already said that to me. It's a matter of, do I trust and believe that? Do we believe God or do we believe the noise? And so we must assess, what are we living by? We must assess what we are living by and what we put our confidence in. And when you're going through something, a test is what you run to. What do you run to when you're unsure? I'm here to tell you today that God is the only one that can solve any problem that you have. Amen. Everything else is just smoke screens and shadow, but it doesn't resolve it. He is a father, he is a friend. And God is touched by our infirmities and he grieves. God doesn't just sit on heaven like Zeus with a long gray beard. No, God actually approaches and pursues man. You want a picture of the heart of Christ? Jesus wept. Jesus cried. But sometimes we don't believe that because we feel the silence is louder than his love. But the truth is, his love is louder. He spoke through his son when he gave him to die on the cross for us. Something, exactly. Something that none of us deserve, none of us earn. We didn't even ask for it. I got into a car accident. Car totaled. I didn't have enough time to ask God to rescue me. Came right blindsided me. But God rescued me. And I think that's a great picture of salvation in a sense. We didn't call for God to rescue us. But God said, I love you. You don't gotta call, I'm coming for you. Will you hold his hand today? And this is not for new believers. This is for seasoned believers who we've just kind of been hardened over time and lost that childlike faith. If you can stand with me, please. God is real. God is present. And God is with us.
Yes.
You must never forget and never go try to find something else that will not solve your problems. It is only God. Wait for it. Trust in him. It will be all right.